Listening to Free City Radio. This is edition 303, and on the broadcast this week, I'm going to be speaking with artist Saire Rafai, who is a visual artist based in Washington State, in Tacoma, and is a member of the Just Seeds Artist Cooperative. That's at justseeds.org. Saire has done some really moving pieces over the last 2 years that speak to the role of artists internationally in advocating for a position of solidarity with the Palestinian people as they experience genocide in Gaza, but also particularly speaks to the discussions within the Iranian diaspora communities. Saire talks about the importance from her vantage point as an Iranian artist to express solidarity with the Palestinian people. I thought it was moving to speak with Saire about her work and particularly about her pieces that look at the complexities of the Iranian diaspora. And it was really a pleasure to highlight this important artistic voice on Free City Radio. So here's our conversation. So in the last 2 years, there's been this wave of graphics and expression of solidarity with the people of Palestine. That's included some of your work that's been distributed through justseeds.org, Just Seeds Artist Cooperative. I was really struck by the imagery in your pieces and also the connections that you're making to your Iranian background. The pomegranate was really striking, but of course your work speaks to the shift online that we're seeing around I recall a time where it was very rare to see artists in the Western context doing graphic work for Palestine, compared to now. So maybe you could just first introduce yourself and share a bit about your recent work in relation to expressing support for Palestine, and then sort of just, yeah, locate us a bit in your own cultural practice. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you for having me. My name is Saire Rafai. I use they, she pronouns. I'm a newer artist to Just Seeds Artist Cooperative. I joined in 2019, 2020, and I currently reside on occupied Puyallup lands in Tacoma, Washington, just south of Seattle. And, you know, the last 2 years have been really difficult, right, for all of those paying attention to the ongoing genocide and annihilation of the Palestinian people. There's really dear friends of mine who've lost a lot of loved ones during this time. And, you know, it's very easy to feel helpless in moments when you think, you know, folks should be doing something and we're all trying to figure out what we can do to not be more complicit in this genocide. Pretty early on, you know, in October of 2023, my friend Tala, who's incredible queer Iranian writer, scholar, reached out and said, "Hey, have you seen any graphics for Iranians in diaspora in solidarity with Palestine?" And I hadn't. And so we had some conversations and I started creating some based on our conversation. And it was a moment for me not only, you know, to see the destruction happening every day, to know that this was a genocide that has been ongoing, maybe slowly, but now it's being exacerbated. And to just come from this mass momentum of women life freedom movement and to the majority, I wouldn't say everyone in the diaspora of Iranians, but majority who've been proponents for the women life freedom movement that is centered in challenging a police state to be silent or to be explicitly Zionist, you know, was very disheartening, so frustrating on top of the ongoing grief of seeing folks being bombarded every day in lieu of our U.S. tax dollars and government in support of Israel. And so, you know, it was something that I think Tala and I needed. We needed community. We needed to know that there were other Iranians out there who care And through some of those graphics that were created and disseminated through our free graphics page on Just Seeds, I've met really incredible, queer, radical Iranians all over the world who give a shit about Palestine, who know that our struggles are intertwined. And it's something that, you know, we needed, and I think our community and diaspora really needed.
For those who are hearing this, can you maybe break down a bit more some of the references, maybe if they're not familiar to, you talked about the protest movement in Iran. You also spoke about the sort of dynamics and debate, or sometimes lack of debate, within the Iranian diaspora communities. It's very important, I think. People can sometimes move to form very quick opinions just by hearing one or two voices, but I think it could be meaningful and interesting for people who are maybe not as plugged into some of those conversations to have a bit more context from your vantage point.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the Iranian diaspora is pretty politically divided, unfortunately. So some of that's based on religion, class. There's a lot of Zionist Iranians in diaspora. And the, you know, growing up, I had a family member who was visiting from Iran. You could say my dad's mom's cousin, so however that relation is, right? But we'd had dinner, and, you know, he's like, one thing you need to know about Iranian history is you need to know the name Mohammad Mossadegh. And I was like, okay, I've heard this name, but he's the 30th prime minister that was democratically elected by the people, anti-imperialist. He wanted to nationalize Iran's oil. He was ousted in a coup by the UK, by the CIA, and a puppet government was put in place for Mohammad Reza Shah, you know, who then was working with Britain and with the United States to supply oil, right? And we see the United States especially seeking out resources, extracting or replacing governments with puppet governments so that they continue their exploitation, right? So there is this interconnectedness in these struggles. And, you know, through the Shah's regime, particularly Muslims were being targeted, imprisoned, killed. And then the revolution happened and the pendulum swung in the opposite direction, right? And so now we have like a really brutal theocracy that is using Islam to really suppress people and their bodily autonomy, you know, imprisoning and killing, mass executions of people of various ethnic identities, different religions, folks who are speaking out against the brutality of the Iranian government. And so the death of a Kurdish Iranian woman, Mahsajina Amini, spurred mass protests, mobilizations in Iran when she was brutally arrested for having her hijab, you know, the morality police, quote unquote, arresting, detaining her, and she ultimately died in their custody from their own physical abuse. And the press that leaked her case, you know, they were imprisoned, right? Two women journalists. Right, we're seeing the persecution and targeting of journalists in Palestine on a daily basis, right? So it's the same tactics are playing out in different regimes, different governing bodies, and it's so hard for me to understand what is going on in people's brains when they don't see the correlations and connections of these various movements when they're rooted in the same types of oppression and tactics. And so, you know, with this image that you're referencing with the pomegranate and with the kufiya heart and the paisley, right? I wanted to find symbols that show a connection, right? That the resistance movements in both of these cases are so much rooted in love for the people, for the land. And, you know, this pomegranate is cultural symbol that I think Palestinians, Iranians share, that it can be this symbol of the soul's immortality, of fertility, birth, rebirth, nature's perfections. You know, it can be in Islam this symbol of paradise, abundance, resilience. And I also think about in other contexts the translation for pomegranate in Spanish is granada or grenade, right? So it can also be a tool, right? And that at the heart of resistance work, liberation is love. And Palestinian resistance shows us that, you know, they're fighting for their families, their neighbors, the land, for life at its core. And that was really important for me to include, not only because it's like one of my favorite fruits, but there's this connection, right, to the land and the people and to life itself. And that's what we're trying to fight for, ultimately, right, for folks to have their sovereignty and to live with dignity.
I think some of the complexities that you talked about, I think people can sort of shy away from really taking them on, right? Not that there's one answer, right? But I've talked to a lot of different Iranian artists, particularly musicians, who have been silent in relation to Palestine. And when I was thinking about our conversation today, I was simply thinking about the graphics that you made and to talk about them. But now that we're talking about this, I think it's an interesting conversation. Yeah, I mean, I'd love to hear what you think about, like, addressing these sort of layered, complex situations without, like, you know, and this sort of speaks to a sort of mindset that I thankfully find in quite a few, you know, different, you know, activist networks, not all of them, but there's this sort of openness to question and to think critically, and to also address things that don't have a simple answer. And I think this is definitely one of those contexts.
Mm-hmm, certainly. And we get a lot of Zionist propaganda through our media telling us it's complicated and, oh, there's all of these nuances. And, you know, it's an ongoing conflict spurred by oppression of the people in the very creation of an apartheid state. And so, you know, with certain interests, and when you follow the money, you have your answers of who's invested in the destruction and annihilation of a people's, and they don't care, you know, who survives at the end of the day. They don't care about the land and all of the thousands of olive trees that are being uprooted, right? They have zero connection to the land and yet claim it to be so. And, you know, I think art can be a really amazing tool for education and to inform folks that it's really not that complicated. And all we're trying to do is, like, care for each other at the end of the day. And the ways that we do that and show up can look very different. And art has been one of the ways that I can do that tangibly, not only for myself, right, in processing so much grief and destruction on a daily basis. You know, it's also a tool for my mental health, right? If I'm being vulnerable, I haven't been able to, like, have an ugly cry since November 2023, right? Like, that's how much I've been suppressing my emotions. But art is a way for me to process some of the things that I'm taking in so that I don't carry all of that grief and despair, and know that I can do something actionable, you know, that's going to reach people who are trying to understand what is going on and why we're still stuck in this place. You know, and you can see in mass mobilizations or through wheat paste or through posters or stickers, right? Like, folks are actively thinking and caring about the people of Palestine and those who are being bombarded and targeted every day, and to disrupt the consciousness of those who are taking in the Zionist propaganda on a daily basis, for them to disrupt and say, no, there are people who care, and maybe I should be paying more attention to this or looking for other news sources, right? Something for them to change their consciousness enough for their hearts and minds to get into action.
Can you talk about these specific series of images with the pomegranate that you mentioned earlier? How did you make them, just like on a technical level, artistically?
Technically, it was just using an iPad and Procreate, you know, piecing together different symbols, right? And then I think with some digital design, it's a fast way to share out messaging, right? I much prefer tedious things like carving out a lino block or wood block, right? But for something that felt so immediate, this is like the medium that, you know, makes sense to me sometimes for something like this.
Tell us a little bit more about your practice as an artist. I can see there's some prints behind you. We're talking, and this is for radio, but for people who hear this, you know, just sort of to know a little bit about your own practice.
Sure. Yeah, I can't take credit for the prints behind me. They're both, I think, some of my first teachers in printmaking. My homie Ashley, who's in Oaxaca, Mexico, was the first person to teach me how to carve a block. And so I was in his family's skate shop, and he taught me how to carve out a wood block maybe in 2011. And then Thea Gar, who's in Just Seeds, and she's the reason why I'm in Just Seeds and has been a big sister mentor to me since probably about the same time. And so they're good reminders for me of how I started, at least with printmaking.
Yeah, just to talk about your practice.
Thank you. I would say I don't have a good structure in my practice. I think this is my first year of doing art full-time. And so in the past, I'd been juggling a full-time job and doing art, and I decided to leave my day job at the end of last year to really focus on art and take that risk and not have any regrets in trying. And so right now I'm just trying to take as many jobs as I can to pay bills and then do things that don't pay the bills but also fulfill me in different ways and support community that I know won't pay my bills. So I wish I could tell you that I wake up early and sketch in a sketchbook. I don't. I don't do it. Like, I'm just like, okay, what needs to happen now? And what can I take on? And I'm still figuring out what is my capacity and what I can do, because creating art takes up a certain amount of mental space when you're focusing on a project, and there's only so many projects I can juggle at one time. So I'd say I'm still figuring it out, and with each project just trying to learn more and challenge myself to try something different. And I really enjoy working in community too, so knowing that I would be more isolated doing art full time, I've trying to be really intentional and take on projects that involve community members so that I don't stay isolated and have a balance of that.
In social movement culture, graphics play such a huge role in communicating in a lot of ways what, you know, a press release can't. What does that mean to you? And maybe just talk about that a bit, about like the role of imagery and different social movements, whether it's movement for Palestine, but also beyond.
Sure. Yeah, I think with any movement, we've seen art at the center of that, right? Like, you can call it propaganda, but the ways that graphics or posters really are an accessible form to disseminate information to the masses, right? And it's, you know, accessible in the ways of affordability for folks to create and just share freely or to sell at low cost. You know, it's something that can be put up in the streets or in classrooms or dorm rooms, right? Utilized for mass mobilizations. And like I said before, I think helps disrupt the everyday routine. You know, when folks are stuck in the hamster wheel, that we're able to plant these seeds of more expansive consciousness and visibility of these really critical issues that can then lead towards direct action and systems change, or just meet people at their own feelings as they're trying to grapple with what is going on in the world, in their communities. And so, you know, I think it can be a way to challenge the structures that are in power, and they can use this against us too, right? I was listening to the Eyewitness Silwan webinar with Nora Erica, Ta-Nehisi Coates, Muhammad El-Kurd, Niall Fort, Ahed Isman, and Tamara Nafar. And they were talking about in Silwan neighborhood, there's all of these public art murals, kind of because so many third spaces are being taken away by the Israeli occupation, right? That Muhammad El-Kurd was kind of framing these murals as a third space for them to be claimed, and, you know, needing I can see if, like, the way that art can take up space physically creates a third space that can unite community. Now Fort had said something about art is the heartbeat of a movement, right? That, you know, we need music, we need dance and visual arts and ways to express ourselves and tell these stories. So not only for recording history, but to, you know, engage with people in real time. And it is a tool for that. And that's why we see the storytellers and the artists and the photographers, you know, being targeted, some of the first folks targeted in, you know, in these fascist regimes, because they don't want those stories to be told. They want to suppress the voice of the people. And art is one way that we can amplify our voices.
Is there like a specific moment or example that comes to mind of when your art was related to a social movement context that was particularly meaningful for you recently, whether it's in an action or within a campaign or at an event or anything that comes to your mind?
I think it's difficult to pinpoint something because there's so much happening all the time. I do think this little graphic, though, that we've been talking about, I honestly think it was one of the first things I created that may have gone viral, especially within the Iranian community. And for a while, I was really nervous that I would be targeted by Zionist Iranians. And thankfully, that hasn't happened, right? But the connections that have formed from that, right? Like meeting, well, I haven't met them in person, but, you know, thinking about Misha, who is a drag king in South Korea, happened upon this graphic, right, and has printed it out and taken it to protests in the streets of Seoul, right? I would have never imagined that something I created would end up in the hands of an Iranian-American who's living in Seoul, South Korea, right? Or to meet other queer Iranians who are just like trying to find community in the United States. So I think the thing is, like, I enjoy the process of creating, and then I allow the art gets to live its own life. And, you know, if it resonates with someone, that is what means the most to me. And the fact that, you know, Tal and I get to discover that there are so many more Iranians in diaspora who do care. And, you know, it is scary to, you know, think about your career being jeopardized or, you know, loss of community and friends because you're aligning yourself with a movement. And yet I think this has been a time for us to know who our real community is and those who whose values truly align and who will show up for each other and show up for us, you know. And so that has been revealing in itself. Right, that of who has stayed silent, you know, to save face with the oppressors, right? And those who are risking it, you know, or have lost their jobs or, you know, lost really important friendships and comrades. And those risks, I think, are minimal to what folks are experiencing every day in Gaza, right? And in the West Bank that, you know, we have to find our community, we have to take care of each other, and, you know, if we have to let some relationships go so that we can find the right ones that will support us and that we can support mutually, like, I think that is so important in all of this.
Thanks so much. Mm-hmm.
That was a conversation with Sairé Rafai, who is an artist based in Washington State in Tacoma. And is a member of the Just Seeds Artist Cooperative. You can learn more about that at justseeds.org. Thank you so much to Sairé for the conversation. This has been another edition of Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoff, and thank you to the Social Justice Center at Concordia University for supporting this broadcast. We air weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays at 11 a.m., on CJLO 1690 AM, also in Montreal, on Wednesdays at 8 AM, on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Tuesdays at 8 a.m., on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m., on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria on Saturdays at 7 a.m., on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto on Fridays at 5:30 a.m., on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m., on CGSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Thursdays at 4:30 p.m., and on CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. I'm Stefan Christoph. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will speak to you next week.